My guest at this time is Walter Williams, syndicated columnist and distinguished professor of economics at George Mason University. He is also the author of American Contempt for Liberty. It's a collection of his columns on a variety of issues ranging from freedom to race and government to academia. And Mr. Williams, it's an honor to have you with us, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, the title is certainly an attention grabber. I think most Americans, regardless of their political stripe, would probably say, I do not have contempt for liberty. But you chronicle in this collection of your columns how over time it looks more and more that way. Why did you use that phrase, and what did you mean by it?
Well, I think it's absolutely right. That is, the average American thinks that it is okay, it is indeed moral, for the Congress to forcibly use one American to serve the purposes of another American. That is, it will forcibly use one American to serve the purposes of farmers in terms of farm subsidies or bank bailouts or welfare or food stamp. And I think that the forcible use of one person to serve the purposes of another is immoral. And matter of fact, that's a working definition of slavery. And so, and then I think that the values that were shared by the founders of our country, they'd be viewed with contempt today. You know, for example, everybody recognized that James Madison was the acknowledged father of the United States Constitution. And in 1794, Congress appropriated $15,000 to help some French refugees. And James Madison stood on the floor of the House irate, and he said, and I'm quoting him, "I cannot undertake to lay my finger on that article in the Constitution that authorizes Congress to spend the money of their constituents for the purposes of benevolence." Now, if you look at the federal budget today, two-thirds to three-quarters of it is for the purpose of benevolence, or either it can be described as the government taking the property of one American and giving it to another to whom it does not belong. And if you ask the question, if a politician is running for office today, making the same statement that James Madison made, the American people would run him out of town on the rail because they'd be contempt. They'd have contempt for that sentiment.
Mr. Williams, you certainly approach most issues from a conservative or even libertarian point of view, and a lot of our audience probably does as well. But how much of what you just described is a problem with both political parties rather than just the left?
It's with, you know, we're all to blame, all the Americans. That is, conservatives or Republicans, they believe in taking your money and my money and giving it to farmers and banks. Liberals and Democrats believe in taking your money and my money and giving it to poor people in cities. They both agree on taking our money, but they just disagree on what to use it for. And so, yes, we the people, not politicians, we the people are to blame. And because politicians are doing precisely what we elect them to office to do, and that is namely take what belongs to one American and bring it back to us. And if you say, let's say you're from the state of Virginia. Let's say I'm running for the Senate in the state of Virginia. And I go back and forth across the state and I say, look, I've read the Constitution of the United States. I know what's in the Constitution. If you elect me to the Senate, don't expect for me to bring back aid to higher education, highway construction funds, prescription drugs. Do you think I would get elected to the Senate from Virginia or any other state?
Probably not.
And the tragedy for our nation is that the people of Virginia would be acting exactly right by not electing me to the office in terms of their self-interest. Because if I don't bring back billions of dollars to the citizens of Virginia, that doesn't mean the citizens of Virginians will pay a lower federal income tax. All that it means is that North Carolina will get it instead. That is, once legalized theft begins, it pays for everybody to participate.
Mr. Williams, since we're so far down the road that we're talking about the American people instinctively rejecting someone who adheres strictly to the Constitution, is it too late to go back in that direction with any success?
Well, I think one of the things we have to recognize is that personal liberty is rare in human history. That is, most of human history has been people have been subject to arbitrary abuse and control by others. And for only a tiny part of mankind's history has there been relative freedom as we enjoy in the United States, or we have enjoyed. Now, I'm afraid that a historian writing maybe 100 years, 200 years from now, he'll say, well, you know, there's this tiny curiosity where people were free. where people had their private property rights respected, but it all went back to the normal state of affairs, arbitrary abuse and control by others. And if you ask the question, which way are we headed, at a little tiny steps at a time, are we headed towards more personal liberty, or are we headed towards more government control over our lives? And I think it would have to be unambiguously the latter.
Well, with government and politicians of all stripes trying to satisfy the demands of those who put them in power, we obviously have too much being spent on trying to please everyone, and that's why we have massive deficits and an ever-increasing debt. You've obviously run the numbers. There's a chapter in here, an essay in here about the future of Social Security and so forth. So if we stay on the current road, how long before we fall off the cliff here?
Well, I think that by 2040, according to conservative estimates, 75% of all tax revenue will go towards Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. And so, the government does many other things. It just won't be that kind of money around. Now, to maintain today's level of benefits in Social Security in the 2030s, the Social Security tax alone will have to be 31%. And I don't believe that people in the labor force in 2030 are going to tax themselves 31% plus the other federal income tax to take care of some old people.
So what happens then? You obviously have people who are going to be holding the bag. They've paid in. They're not going to get their benefits. And ultimately, you're going to have people who right now they won't even countenance cuts in projected increases. So how do you ever expect anybody to make the tough decisions to actually get these things under control?
Well, it just won't happen. And see, the people who are receiving Social Security today, and their political leaders, they won't be around in 2030. So what do they care about 2030? That is, a politician that does things that will benefit our country in 2030, he'll get run out of office by the people who are around in 2015. That is, and so and no politician with any kind of political sense, now I'm not talking about moral sense, but political sense, will do things that will run him out of office today.
What's your estimation for the future? You've been in the classroom a long time. You've seen college students come and go. You talk about academia in this book. Obviously, for the most part, higher education has a lot of liberalism being promoted there. What do you see different now in the classroom as compared to when you started at Mason 35 years ago, and where do you think it's headed?
Well, it's not headed in a good direction. I think that if you look at colleges in general, 50% of the students should not be in college in the first place. And part of my evidence for saying that is that slightly over 51% of incoming freshmen require remedial math, remedial English, and remedial writing. So that says that the high schools around our country are issuing fraudulent diplomas. That is a 12th grade diploma that attests that the kids can read and write it at the 12th and compute at 12th grade level when in fact they cannot. And I think that young people they're uninformed. They know very little about the history of our country. They don't know anything about the founding of our country. And I mean, there have been survey questions asking college seniors, where does the statement "from each according to their abilities and to each according to their needs"? Where does that come from? Some will say that it's in the Bill of Rights, as opposed to the Communist Manifesto. And so I don't have a lot of confidence in our future, but I hope that I'm wrong. Now, if you say, well, is there a light? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? Well, there might be a glimmer of one. That is the Obama administration, when their first 2 years, when they controlled the Senate and the House and the White House, they were so brazen that for the first time in our history, first time in my life, Americans are debating about the Constitution. There's the formation of the Tea Party movement. States attorney general started suing the federal government over Obamacare, and a number of state legislatures have written 10th Amendment resolutions. Now, whether this is too little, too late, that's a question I don't know. History will tell us whether it's true or not.
Yeah, time will tell, certainly. For those who want to know whether they can still make a difference, whether it's their own personal liberty Some say it's you make a bigger difference working in local issues rather than trying to change things in Washington. Where's the perhaps the quickest and most meaningful way that either an individual or smaller groups of people can make a difference?
Well, I don't know whether I can. I think that our major job, and this is for people who have free markets, who are radio talk hosts and writers, and just the ordinary citizen, our major job is to try to convince our fellow American on the moral superiority of personal liberty and its main ingredient, limited government. That is, we have to somehow change the American people. That is, we can't worry about politicians, because politicians do what American people want. If American people want us to have a constitutional form of government, then politicians will do the same thing. But we have to somehow get our fellow American to believe in the moral superiority of personal liberty. And while I say that, you know, when I talk about limited government, I don't mean I'm against helping our fellow man in need. I believe that helping one's fellow man in need by reaching into one's own pockets is praiseworthy and laudable. Helping one's fellow man by reaching in somebody else's pockets is worthy of condemnation. And for the Christians among us, when God gave Moses the commandment, thou shalt not steal, he did not mean that thou shalt not steal unless you got a majority vote in Congress.
Last question, Professor Williams. As you said, time will tell if anything can change in a meaningful way. What are you looking for? What are you listening for in this presidential debate to determine whether or not any of these candidates have the right mindset of what needs to be done to turn this around?
Well, I think that these candidates have to have the courage to say, to be able to say the kind of things that James Madison said, or Thomas Jefferson, or George Mason, the founders of our country. And I think they need to show the American people that we have to have a generalized distrust of the United States Congress, just as our founders did. And you people say, what do you mean distrust? Well, look at the language of the Bill of Rights. It says, Congress shall not infringe. Congress shall not disparage. Congress shall not prohibit. If the founders of our country did not believe Congress would do those kind of things, why in the world do they put them? Well, they write it down in the Bill of Rights. And after that, and I've often told people that when we die, and if at our next destination we see anything like a Bill of Rights, we know that we're in hell. Because a Bill of Rights in heaven would be an insult to God. It would be saying that we cannot trust God.
Powerful point to close on. Professor Williams, thank you very much for all your work, and thank you very much for your time today.
And thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Walter Williams, syndicated columnist, distinguished professor of economics at George Mason University. You've also heard him sub for Rush Limbaugh many times. His new book is American Contempt for Liberty. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.